If you've ever watched a painter work a canvas, you see the very transformation of absence into presence. Right? The white canvas gets swirled and lined with colors, and these vague shapes begin to form substance. You watch as the image in the artist's head begins to form in real time. Right? These swirls begin to form faces, and these other ones, the clouds, and these other, the grassy hills. And in real time, the picture comes into focus. The picture which was inside their mind is made manifest. It's like we can see her thoughts and what she cares about in watching her paint as she creates life like the breath of God. Christians have long offered a specific image of Jesus to the world. An image painted, sculpted, molded, carved, frescoed, breathed into life by artists. And it's always a gaunt man hanging from a cross, limp, convicted, dying. An image we might recall in the language of Jürgen Moltmann's classic, The Crucified God. Jesus, at his lowest point, was physically raised up onto a cross, an image that should be the end of the story, except that we remember that beautiful line from John, which guides us then, "For God so loved the world," which is to say that God loved the world enough to make the story not end there. Many of us recall this image in the crucifix, like the one hanging in the cloister room or in the one some of us wear around our necks, and we go to the low point to see God's greatness. That is the image revealed of a man dying on a cross is beyond comprehension. Revealed in all these brush strokes and all these shapes begetting faces and these faces begetting characters, right? The disciples, the crowds, the Pharisees, scribes and elders, the Canaanite woman, and all those who gathered their sick and wounded and dying and possessed and brought them to Jesus that they might touch his cloak and be healed. If this is the image of the Messiah, Peter has absolutely no clue what he's talking about. Funny how we get the image in the end and still look at it half completed. Jesus no more establishes the church, bishops, and Peter as the Pope here in this story than he founded Long John Silver's when he fed the multitudes, right? Early leaders like Cyprian justified their hierarchies, matched, strangely, to Roman order. Right? Thence, through the changes of times and successions, the ordering of bishops and the plan of the church flow onwards, so that the church is founded upon the bishops and every act of the church is controlled by these same rulers. That's from the 3rd century. Neat, tidy, everything in its place and under control. Much like the ones who put Jesus on the cross, as we've captured in our image. The ones protecting our order from an itinerant preacher and prophet calling for a love revolution. Protecting it so much that they have that man killed on a cross. The execution reserved for terrorists and insurrectionists. Those who threaten Roman order. This is the image revealed in the second half of the story, the one the lectionary would have us do next week. That we can't handle these two events in concert, that Peter might know who Jesus is without seeing the whole picture, that he might get the right answer with the wrong theorems to get him there. Peter calls him Messiah, and he is. It's just Peter doesn't have Jesus' definition worked out yet. He sees the shapes an image is forming, and he thinks he knows what that image will be. It will be a king like David on a throne, not his rabbi stripped, beaten, and hanged. It's odd to talk about the crucifixion now in August, in the middle of Matthew, but the gospel story is starting to talk about it. The image is forming, and the raw materials we have to make this picture are those healings and the miraculous feeding of the multitudes twice. And we have our subjects, Jesus, of course, right? But also the disciples and crowds and the Pharisees, scribes, elders, Sadducees, they're in there. The Samaritans and Canaanites, Jesus' family, and the parents of Peter and Andrew and James and John. We have the startling miracles that people see and the ones which greatly disturb the disciples and frighten them. We have teachings of upside-down economies and kingdoms ruled by the poor. Direct lessons about neither fighting nor running away, but standing up to evil. And indirect lessons found in parables and stories. And amid all of these pieces, we have, by the point we're wrestling with this morning, chapter 16 of Matthew, we don't see a cross emerging from this image. We aren't seeing a man dying brutally to the evil impulses of the state to protect its precious order, or the church bearing the same evil impulse. The image we have at this point looks nothing like a cross, but it shouldn't look like a king either. The man in this image looks like nothing our worldly analogies can contain. He's beyond man, faith healer, shepherd, rabbi, holy man, right? Even son of God, or simply God. All too easily defined and ordered. It seems an assault on what it means to be the Christ. This chapter begins with a story that often is taken as a throwaway, but it isn't. The lectionary skips it for brevity. But if we remember from last week, we had Jesus' encounter with the Canaanite woman in chapter 15, and Jesus extends his blessing beyond the children of Israel in a profound and challenging way. And they go from there to do all these more healings all over the countryside, and a second feeding story, this time 4,000. And then chapter 16 begins with another interruption. This time it's the Pharisees and the Sadducees that come to Jesus to test him, asking for a physical sign. They want him to show them his power, a proof perhaps from heaven. And he responds, "You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the signs of the times." They come to Jesus as skeptics, of course, right? But their skepticism is about him rather than God, they think. Everything is so precisely ordered and structured about how God operates, they think. So God wouldn't come to them as Jesus. No, they know better. They can be certain of that. So they demand, "Make your proof." But they should already see the proof in the wonders he has done, in the people who are doing the wonders in his name, and in the changing face of this growing movement who will overturn the exploitation economy and bring about a new jubilee, or they would. Those are the signs they are missing, the signs so many more missed as they formed the passion and that indelible image of a man hanged. Missed, too, in the centuries which followed as they built a new church, persecuted their Jewish brothers and sisters, and sought order to still the storm rather than calling for Jesus. I don't fault the church for pursuing order in the midst of chaos. Really, it seems quite natural. like we always do. It's what we do. We go back to our structure and stability, our leaders and laws. And when these all break down, we long for some protection and someone to rise to the challenge, to confront the chaos, because that's what we do. And I can't help but think, if it has something to do with that image of Jesus that we give to each other, the one with Jesus hanging there, silently, unmoving, forever tortured and forever dying up on that cross. So still, he doesn't move because he can't. They've tied his hands and driven nails through his wrists and ankles, so he's not going anywhere. But he doesn't. And he hasn't for 2,000 years, because that's the image. He's still up there on the cross, even when he comes to Mary at the tomb, or when he comes to the disciples in the upper room, and definitely not at the beach. And I have no doubt they saw in those moments the face they saw at the feeding, the same face. The face transfigured and the face they didn't recognize as he walked on water. The same face we stare into these paintings and these stained glass and on those crucifixes, hoping that we can break through their inanimate state and find him somewhere other than on a cross. Somewhere not so distant and high from us, but instead right here next to us in this pain and confusion. The cross isn't Jesus, or the defining character of the man or the Messiah. But we spend our lives shaping that paint for each other and making this image swirl and come alive. We are artists for each other, painting a new image and breathing life into Jesus. Our lives are icons leading us to Jesus. Our marks, struggles, and loves, they're all signs we need. Signs revealed as we flip the economy, sharing kingdom of relationship rather than order, an empire overthrown by our love revolution. In that image, the children of God are blessed in their making shalom. And we won't have to ask, we'll know.